The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Glory America, bonjour, hi, Canada, Hugh Hewitt live from Studio North. Winterfell has fallen. Genghis Kate arrived up in the north on Saturday and flying the flayed man banner. So it's been a rout this weekend. I'm awfully glad to be speaking with you today. I think I'm going to stay at the studio for 14 hours and check in then if she's back to sleep. I am so glad to be with you on a first day of August, rabbit day. Let me begin, though, with the bad news. The Kentucky death toll from flooding has risen to 28 in the eastern Kentucky region, hit hard by floods on Friday. And thoughts and prayers there. Across the United States, economic hardship is descending as Joe Biden's plan takes form. Corporations on the front lines of the economy say cracks are forming, according to the Washington Post. In recent days, executives from the biggest tech, retail, and consumer product companies all attempted to address questions about the state of the economy, which is teetered on the brink of a recession. Recession is now identifying as not recession. So even though we've had two successive quarters of negative growth, experts and Joe Biden say it's not a recession. Energy prices may keep inflation high for years, according to the Wall Street Journal's Gwynne Gilford. Of all the drivers behind the dramatic price rise in U.S. inflation, perhaps the most acute is the surge in energy prices. It may also be among the most persistent. Is the U.S. in recession? The Financial Times asks, measuring the slowdown in the world's U.S. Biggest economy. Meanwhile, the Wall Street Journal this morning has an editorial, the Schumer Mansion tax increase on everyone. Majority Leader Chuck Schumer wants a Senate vote on his partisan tax deal with Joe Manchin as early as this week. And no wonder he wants to rush it through. The more Americans learn about it and what's in this tax and spend behemoth, the more they will dislike it. Start with the author's central claim that the bill will reduce the deficit and thus inflation. The Penn-Wharton budget model, which Senator Manchin has been known to watch, examined the details of the Schumer-Manchin bill and found it doesn't contain any net deficit reduction until 2027. Quote, the impact on inflation is statistically indistinguishable from zero through 2031, says the Penn-Wharton modelers. We don't agree with those who think deficit reduction leads in a straight line to lower inflation, but that's what the Democrats claim for their bill. If the first deficit reduction doesn't come for 5 years, where's the help on inflation today? The $327 billion in new taxes could slow inflation if the economy falls into recession. And that may be the quiet expectation, the journal continues. The tax increases on business will discourage investment, while the Federal Reserve is also raising business costs with higher interest rates. But tax policy should be working in the opposite direction to encourage investment when the Fed is tightening and the economy is close to recession. Evidence is emerging that the new Schumer-Manchin 15% minimum tax on corporate book income is especially harmful to U.S. manufacturing firms. Analysis by Congress's Joint Committee on Taxation, hardly a nest of supply-siders, found that 49.7% of the tax would hit U.S. manufacturers. The book minimum tax would hit the accelerated depreciation of the tax code that let businesses write off investment in, say, new factories. Wholesale trade, 9.3%. Retail trade, 4.9%. And information companies, 11.5%, would get off relatively easy by comparison. You should note as well that the taxes will rise by $16.7 billion this next year on Americans earning less than $200,000 a year. It's just an insane bill to rush through. Joe Manchin caved, and then he spent all weekend running around the Sunday shows trying to persuade people he didn't cave. Here's Joe Manchin talking with Brett Baer, cut number four on Fox News Sunday.
Well, here's the Tax Foundation. They say the proposed 15% minimum tax on corporate book income is the most economically damaging provision in the bill, reducing GDP by 0.1%, costing about 27,000 jobs. Here's Americans for Tax Reform on the energy portion. The legislation would impose a regressive tax on oil and gas development based upon emission levels of methane during production, leading to higher energy bills for consumers and higher costs of everyday products. Are they wrong?
We've worked with all those industries all the way through this piece of legislation on my side. All of my staff did. And when they're talking about the things they're talking about, that's not true at all.
No, Joe, nobody believes you anymore. Nobody believes anything about you. Joe Manchin on Face the Nation with John Dickerson, cut number three.
John, I didn't change my mind. I've never changed at all. This is fighting inflation. This is all about the absolute horrible position that people are in now because of the inflation cost, whether it be gasoline, whether it be food pricing, whether it be energy pricing. And it's around
just
energy.
I can't take it. It's all a lie. It's all because he caved to Democratic pressure from the left wing and he was being made a mockery of. He's decided to retire. He can't win again in West Virginia, having now bent and broken. Last one, Jonathan Carl on This Week, cut number two, more Joe Manchin.
Well, we had 17 economists, Nobel laureate economists, say that a year ago almost, said that the inflation would be transitory and wouldn't last, it would just go away. So I understand there's difference of opinion, but everybody, if they look at this bill objectively, we're paying down $300 billion in...
No, they're not. They're not paying down anything. It's a huge tax increase, and they're spending more than they're taking in. And all the deficit reduction, as the Wall Street Journal just pointed out, occurs beginning in 2027. And, of course, everything will have changed by then. They're going to send us into recession. That's how they're going to beat inflation. And you're going to suffer. Let's do one more. Joe Manchin with Jake Tapper on CNN State of the Union yesterday, cut number five.
First of all, I respectfully disagree with the people from Penn Wharton. They're wonderful people. We've worked with them tremendously. We just have a disagreement on this. But, you know, there were 17 Nobel laureates who said that.
Stop. So you got the tag. I just want you to hear the talking points. He came out with talking points because he's just getting withered. And West Virginia will toss him out if he dares run again. And he's not a middle guy. He just caved. Will Kyrsten Sinema cave? Well, she's the senator from Arizona that stands between you and a massive tax hike and worse recession. Pat Toomey, senator from Pennsylvania, went on Face the Nation with John Dickerson, said this, cut number seven.
Well, it's going to make inflation worse, actually. So they've got a big corporate tax increase that's going to probably make this recession that we're in worse. All of this spending is unnecessary. It's going to exacerbate inflation. It is not going to reduce the deficit. And what did Senator Manchin get for this? Look, I'm a big fan of Joe Manchin. We are friends, as he said, and I like Joe very much. But I think he got taken to the cleaners. He's agreeing to all this bad policy, in return for which he's been promised that there's going to be some kind of pro-energy infrastructure bill sometime in the future.
Key point there is he got taken to the cleaners. That's the key point. RIP Bill Russell. The amazing man who transformed pro basketball died yesterday at the age of 88. Guardians won yesterday. I'm going to get it soon. Guardians won yesterday. So they're one game out of first place as August opens, which I never saw coming. And the decision on Deshaun Watson comes today. It'll be interesting to see what former U.S. District Court Judge Sue Robinson rules about the allegations about Deshaun Watson. I'm just keeping my powder dry until after that decision comes down. If it happens during the show, I'll tell you about it. Stay tuned, America. I'll be right back from Studio North. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Nothing matters more than the Pennsylvania Senate race. There are some that matter as much, but if John Fetterman beats Dr. Oz in Pennsylvania, it'd be very hard to get the 51 or 52 that the Republicans need. Selena Zito will be on this show, I think, between 10 times between now and the election day. And so, Selena, I got to ask you, how's this feel to you? Because it seems to me that Fetterman still isn't well, and Dr. Oz is out there working it hard. How's it feel on the ground in Pennsylvania?
It feels like what a statewide race traditionally feels like in this state. With the exception that Fetterman isn't out there, and Oz is out there all the time. Now, I think it's kind of fascinating if you read the reports outside of, in D.C. or out of New York, they're saying, oh, Oz isn't anywhere. Well, he's exhausting. He's everywhere. He's doing that sort of unglamorous, unsexy thing of just going around the state, logging on mouths, more importantly, logging on relationships and rebuilding them with people. As we all know, it was a pretty ugly primary, but most primaries are ugly. And so he's going to continue to be out there. What I think is sort of interesting is that Fetterman has adopted this sort of punch and grab Twitter persona, right? But, he's out there sort of doing all these tweets, but these tweets are not based on anything that are substantive. So he's hitting Oz, but he's hitting Oz on things that has nothing to do with what people are concerned about. And that's sort of his problem. He thinks it is clever. My profession thinks it's clever and smart and funny. But these are very serious times. There are very serious issues. And I don't think there's a lot of patience with this kind of cuteness.
He's hitting Oz on having a lot of houses and being very wealthy. And we know that. Dr. Oz is very wealthy, has a lot of houses, and he's from New Jersey, and he moved back to Pennsylvania to run for the Senate. We all know that. I think actually voters are pretty smart, and they know this is about control of the U.S. Senate. And they know that Fetterman is a left-wing extremist. Did they know that he's sick? I mean, really sick?
I think right now this race is covered very superficially. I think you're right. Voters do know he's sick, but voters also know that his politics are not center-left. They're left of left. There's very little appetite for that among independent or culturally conservative Democrats, let alone Republicans. And they're making the gamble that they think, because David McCormick, they're upset and they're not going to vote for Oz and Trump and, whatever else they want to throw into the mix. But if they think a Republican is going to vote for John Fetterman because David McCormick didn't win, they've got another thing coming. And by the way, I have a story coming out later on today about McCormick. He's going to be out there campaigning with Oz and for Oz.
Yeah, that's good news. I there is always a bit of a letdown. I endorse McCormick. I'm sorry he didn't get the nomination. I think it would have been a walk in the park if he'd been the nominee. But Donald Trump endorsed Dr. Oz. That got Dr. Oz over the finish line. The people who hate Trump already were going to vote for Fetterman. But I keep stressing, John Fetterman is AOC times two and further to the left with a tattoo, right? That's basically it.
Well, yeah, and he has a lot of her team on her team. Which I think is why, the quote unquote clever tweet. Look, you don't win an election on a tweet. I don't care what you don't win by Twitter. I don't care what my profession says. That's not how an election is won in Pennsylvania.
Now, Twitter is a bulletin board for Manhattan Beltway elite media and those who follow it, like I do. I want to know what's going on in Manhattan Beltway elite media. And there are a few Hollywood people like Seth Rogen and other folks who get on there. And there's a lot of promotion now, a lot of movies, openings, that sort of thing. But it's not America. I mean, 9.1% inflation is America. And over the weekend, we got the new bottom line indicator of inflation. It's still going up, Selena.
Oh, yeah. People are really, if people read my dispatches from across the country, people are really feeling this pain. And the other problem is that there is a real fear out there. And I wrote about it this week. This White House keeps telling you, don't believe your lying eyes. Don't believe how you feel. No, people feel this way. They feel uncertain. And that is a really important aspect of this this year's races.
We'll keep talking about it through the fall. To get all of Selena's dispatches, all of her columns, sign up at selenazito.com. I want to remind you that our sponsor is andrewandtodd.com. They're with Sierra Pacific. They lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance. So if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to andrewandtodd.com or call them at 888-1172. Morning, Glory America. Bonjour, hi, Canada. It's August 1st in the year of our Lord, 2022. Richard Nixon's presidency was significant on many, many grounds, but perhaps the most significant thing he did with the most lasting impact was to sign the Budget Reconciliation Act of July 12, 1974. 50 years later, it continues to drive the politics of the United States. Jake Sherman joins me at Punch Bowl News. Jake, the Budget Reconciliation Act of 1974 establishes the reconciliation process, which Joe Manchin has signed on to. If they get 50 votes plus the vice president, they can pass whatever they want. That's a tax and spend measure. And Joe Manchin came along. First question, will Kyrsten Sinema come along?
Good morning, you. I think the answer to that is yes. I don't know if she's going to come along in with the exact bill that's on the table now, but I do think she will come along. I think what we're likely to see, and I don't feel 100% confident of this, but I think what she'll try to do is remove some of the tax provisions, perhaps get rid of the getting rid of the carried interest loophole, which is a loophole that hedge fund managers and private equity managers use to control tax on their income. But my base case is that, yes, this does get done and Sinema does come along.
I think she'll fold as well, because you don't want people following her into the bathroom for the rest of her days. But I want your opinion on this, Jake. The iconic Maverick photo of all time is when Arizona Senator John McCain walks to the well of the Senate and puts thumb down on the Republican attempt to repeal Obamacare in the first year of the Trump presidency. That's the all-time Maverick photo. Kyrsten Sinema wants to be John McCain. She will never be John McCain if she votes for this. Do you agree that her Maverick status is gone?
Well, I don't. She has tried to be Maverick-like. I think that's probably right. But at the end of the day, this is a bill with, and I agree with you on McCain, but this is a bill that has, much of this bill are things that she wants and she supports. She is not for raising taxes, which is, I think, you know, that's the sticking point here. But I do think that there's a lot in this bill that she would like. And that's the case that Joe, that's kind of what Joe Manchin's selling point has been.
Now, the way it works, I want people to understand this. I'm writing a column on Voterama. After reconciliation gets put onto the floor, an open amendment process follows. And anyone can propose everything. It's been used for symbolic votes because at the end of that process, there's a wraparound amendment that takes it back to the original bill. So they just jettison everything they've passed. Unless something gets the kind of support that makes the wraparound amendment yield to it. Have I stated that accurately, Jake?
Yes. Yes, you have. And the Voterama will take a long time. It could take 3, 4, 5 days on the Senate floor. There are ways to control how long it takes. But yes, there's basically at the end of the process, there will be an amendment that kind of nullifies all the other amendments should they pass.
So unless they provide for some of those amendments to go in, the ones that Sinema, for example, wants, correct?
Yes, that's right. And so the thing to remember, sorry, Hugh, but the thing to remember is that 51 votes in this case means you could do anything in the Senate pretty much if you stick together
on this bill. So if I were the Republicans, instead of doing all the symbolic stuff out there, I'd focus all my energy on a handful that you want to actually make it into the wraparound amendment. One of them, for example, take some of that green money and build nuclear plants, the new ones, the kind that Bill Gates likes, the modular, very safe, very low risk. I mean, extremely low risk nuclear plants. They can be built quickly. Do you think that would have a prayer of picking up a 51st vote from the Democrats?
So the answer to that is maybe, but the larger thing is Schumer is able to or should be able to and will try to hold people together against some of these amendments. And I don't know about the nuclear. I don't know if they're going to do something like that. But if he wants, if he's able to, he could try to convince people to stick together because, they don't want to they don't want to change this bill too much. And by the way, that would be a relatively significant change to the legislation.
It would, but it would also make sense given that the climate change folks don't have an alternative. I mean, we can't do it with solar and wind and turbine. We got to have natural gas and nuclear energy. And nuclear energy is the one that I believe Manchin and a few other people believe in. Second thing I want to ask you about is the old Hyde Amendment, which prohibited federal funding for abortion. Manchin says he's pro-life. Bob Casey Jr. says he's pro-life. If they put back in the Hyde Amendment, can they make it through a wraparound amendment with that, Jake Sherman?
Yes, but the Hyde Amendment is the law of the land. So, I mean, there's no reason to have that in the bill. I mean, that is already the reality. That's embedded in our laws. So, I imagine that Republicans could put something like that up, but I don't. It's superfluous in a sense.
Well, it is, but it's also the key symbolic one, particularly if you add in funding for crisis pregnancy centers. And the case against that is that we don't like it. It's not lack of need, especially in the aftermath of the Dobbs decision. There are a couple others I would do, but have the Republicans ever adopted the strategy of focusing on a handful of amendments that they want to try and peel off one Democrat to make it through the wraparound amendment to restore the original?
Well, not usually. Usually there's a ton of amendments and there's a ton of people who want to try to trip Democrats up. And I imagine we'll see that this time around. Although, listen, as soon as they get this done, they're on August recess. So maybe they'll be less incentivized to keep on going.
Now, Jake, this is a pure objective assessment. Those symbolic votes never matter. They used to think, oh, we'll put it in a TV commercial. That stuff doesn't work anymore. You know, if someone is voting against, they might want to vote on end strength in the military. They might want to vote on upping base pay for the military. They might want to vote on more ships for the Navy. Those might stick. But generally, the symbolic stuff that you can get 51 votes for that then gets blown out by the wraparound amendment at the end, it just doesn't matter in campaign. Campaigns are a year away in reality. It's 10 weeks, but it's a year away in reality, isn't it?
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I think people do tend to overthink this stuff and think that there really is a gotcha thing here, when in reality, these races are won and lost and are waged on issues that are kind of already baked into the national psyche, which is going to be, do you agree with what Democrats have done? Do you disagree with what Democrats have done? And inflation. There's also other issues, of course, but like, I don't think that anything that happens during this Voterama will have a massive impact in the election.
I also don't think that there is a renaissance of Biden underway. I mean, we saw a lot of elite media trying to say Joe Biden's had a string of wins. CHIPS Act is not a Biden win. That's a country win. And reconciliation, which is a tax and spend package in the middle of an inflationary spiral. Jake, tell me, do you think Biden comes out of this appreciably better? He's at 38% in the Gallup, the all time low.
I don't think it matters a ton for him, but I think, listen, I think with the base, this is a big bill for the base. There are a ton of provisions in here that will have, that are widely bipartisan, that are widely popular. Letting Medicare negotiate for prescription drug prices is something that has gotten support on both sides of the aisle historically. So I think there are some things here. CHIPS bill Biden was not really involved with. Gina Raimondo, his commerce secretary, was. But on those two issues, so the gut of your question is this a big win for Biden? I think it's a modest win for him. I think it's getting something done, which he's not been able to do it down on the Hill.
Does it turn around 38% approval?
I don't think so. Personally, I don't. I think people don't think the country's going in the right direction. The economy is softening, and I think those are issues that weigh on his approval rating.
Let that sink in, America, because Jake is a straight shooter, and I just think the election's already over. And some of the Senate races might turn on whether or not Fetterman can get back on the trail versus Oz, or who the Republicans nominate in New Hampshire, or whether the Latinos shift in Nevada, or whether Herschel runs a absentee campaign and refuses to debate unless Hugh Hewitt is moderating. But generally, the House is over, Jake. That's my opinion.
I tend to agree that the House is, especially, I think people overthink this. I mean, the House margin is already incredibly narrow. And if Republicans win the average of what they win in the first midterm, then they're in the majority by a lot.
And then this nonsense stops and we can get to serious legislating. Jake Sherman, always a pleasure. Punch Bowl News is free, free, free. I get it every morning. I read it every morning. There's a great quote in it this morning about Joe Manchin saying of Senator Sinema, I would like to think she'd be favorable towards it, but I respect her decision. She'll make her own decision based on the contents. Well, I'm hoping Senator Sinema is a maverick in word and deed, not just in wishful thinking. Jake Sherman on Twitter, at Jake Sherman. I'll be right back, America. Stay tuned to the Hugh Hewitt Show. Welcome back, America. If you're following my Twitter account, you'll see I just retweeted National Review's endorsement of Eric Schmidt, who I endorsed last week in the Missouri race, which is tomorrow. They also have their editorial titled No to Greitens. That is absolutely the most important thing for you to take away. If you vote for Eric Greitens, you're voting to lose in the fall. Josh Krosshauer joins me from Axios. Good morning, Josh.
Good morning, Hugh.
What's your assessment of the Missouri race tomorrow?
Yeah, it does look like National Review's choice in Attorney General Eric Schmidt is the clear favorite. Greitens has been slipping in the polls ever since a super PAC has been spending money to remind Missouri voters about his scandalous record. And Schmidt has been the Republican taking advantage of the Attorney General. He's got a lot of prominent conservative endorsements. Yeah, and actually, it's a pretty big loss for Josh Hawley if that happens. He endorsed Congresswoman Vicki Hartzler, who was in the mix for a moment in time. She still has a chance to win, but it does seem like Schmidt has all the late momentum, according to the latest round of polling.
Yeah, and I don't know Missouri politics. I do know attorney generals make good senators. And so Josh Hawley was the attorney general. He's a good senator. But Eric Greitens, what do you think has dragged him down most? The basement incident, which was either rape or kinky sex at best, the impeachment, the embezzlement allegations about campaign funding, or the domestic abuse allegations which came out this summer, which have been verified and understood? He beat up his wife and his kid.
Is all of the above an option? I think every single one of those examples in and of itself would be, the end of any campaign. Once they were on the airwaves, people don't pay attention to government and politics as much as you would hope. And it just took someone to spend money to get those allegations aired, remind voters what the track record is of Brighton. I think the domestic abuse stuff is beyond the pale. The allegations from his ex-wife, I think that was a nail in the coffin for Brighton. But everything else, very, very damaging as well.
I think Eric Schmidt will be the nominee come the fall. Now, Josh, let me ask you, you've become, and I'm glad to see this, the go-to objective guy, like Michael Barone used to be. You show up on the Sunday shows, you show up on all the different networks because you're the go-to guy for objective analysis. My take, I'm a partisan. My take is that the reconciliation bill, while a terrible idea that will add to inflation and raise taxes, will have zero impact on the election. The Senate races, like Oz and Fetterman, like Herschel Walker and Raphael Warnock, will turn on the campaigns, and the House is a baked cake. What do you make of my take?
Your take is actually quite similar to what Democratic strategists have said, who are just involved in the politics. I'm not the policy, but the politics. There's some benefits for insulin coverage, which may show up in a few of these competitive races if this bill gets passed. But this is climate, the healthcare benefit. These are largely policy issues that don't have an immediate effect. They're not going to have a political impact. The only thing I could see helping the Democrats is that the Democratic Party, if this bill passes, at least unites the party. That they've been all fighting amongst themselves, fighting amongst the Manchin wing of the party, the liberal wing of the party. At the very least, they're all on the same page. It seems like if Kyrsten Sinema gets on board. So I think that helps unify the party and actually gives them a big, they can talk about how Biden actually got one of his accomplishments passed. But other than that, I just think that the economy, inflation, the overall macroeconomic indicators are going to be driving this political environment. Crime and immigration, too. These are issues that people are really talking about, and it's affecting their quality of life, and it doesn't help the party in power right now.
Well, let's focus on Senator Sinema for our remaining time, Josh Krosshauer. And you can follow Josh at Josh Krosshauer on Twitter. It's now no longer Hotline Josh. He's moved over to Axios. And Jim VanderHey is very happy with himself for grabbing Josh Krosshauer. Josh, Senator Sinema established herself as the successor to McCain. His iconic moment is the thumbs down on the attempt to repeal Obamacare. She spent a lot of political capital grabbing that middle ground. She will give it up. she will forfeit it if she hits the second iceberg. You can run into one iceberg in the Senate and tick off the base. But then if you run into the other iceberg and pass a tax and spend bill, you've left yourself sinking. What do you think are the chances she goes along and caves to the left here?
Well, look, she's got cover from Joe Manchin now. So whatever, and Joe Manchin's up in 2024 as well. So I think politically speaking, she's fine. I think she may try to negotiate some changes to the bill. She's been a longtime foe of a carried interest provision that's in this legislation. There may be some changes that she requires, and it'll get whittled out if she ultimately has the leverage right now. But she has to worry about a Democratic primary, too. Right now, if she was on the ballot in Arizona, she'd probably lose in a primary. She's in good shape in the general. She's got a lot of independents. Even some Republicans would support her. But I think she's going to spend some of that political capital on the right or in the middle and try to shore up her standing among the liberals who have been fuming mad at her in Arizona. So I have a hard time seeing how she comes out against this. You have all the moderates in the House, even the progressives, have indicated they're going to support this when it gets to the lower chamber. It's hard unless Sinema really just wants to go out, drop the mic, and you know.
Well, there you go.
Even John.
Does she want to be the maverick? Does she build a life based upon that? She might win the primary. She will not win the general if she votes for this thing. She will lose it, lose it, lose it. But she can drop the mic. You identified it. What does she gain from that, Josh Krasher, dropping the mic? 30 seconds.
Well, look, she'd be forever cemented in political history, not no less Arizona history, if she blocked this deal. But look, that she would have a pathway to win the general. It's just the primary.
She could switch to be a Republican and be nominated in a heartbeat. Right?
Well, I don't know. The way the Republican Party in Arizona is going these days, I'm not so sure about that.
Remember Ben Campbell? Remember him up in Colorado, bordering state? Yep, that's what she'd become. Well, we'll see. Josh Krasher, always a pleasure. Follow him on Twitter at Josh Krasher. Follow me to hour number 3 of the Hugh Hewitt Show. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt, joined now by my friend Keith Kroc. He was the Undersecretary of State in the Trump administration, the go-to guy for Mike Pompeo and President Trump on clean tech, making tech safe for everyone around the world. Undersecretary Kroc, welcome back to the Hugh Hewitt Show.
Hugh, it's so good to be back with you. I really appreciate it.
You're almost abandoning Cleveland, right? You're going to go see your mom in Cleveland?
I'm going to go see my 95-year-old mom in Cleveland tomorrow. So I'm so excited. Back to your home turf.
Yeah. Now, Undersecretary Kroc, I want to talk to you about two things. Nancy Pelosi has announced she's going to Taiwan and the CHIPS Act. So what do you make of Speaker Pelosi? I think it's a great thing that she carried through under all these threats. What do you think about that?
By the way, I absolutely do. You know, Hugh, I remember when I had this great honor to be the highest ranked State Department official to go to Taiwan in 41 years. I was greeted with 40 fighters and bombers going over the Meridian Line. But I can tell you, this is really important. And Taiwan is a linchpin of democracy. They're a role model for freedom. And to General Secretary Xi, what it represents to him is it dispels his myth that the Chinese culture cannot live under a democracy.
Now, you know, when you say that, Xi is about to be reelected to another 5-year term. He's basically leader for life. He's a dictator. China looks to me to be under extraordinary stress under Secretary Kroc, right? I mean, their Evergrande, their real estate market, their lack of resources and their lockdown policy, they are under a lot of stress. Is that tempting him to lurch at Taiwan?
By the way, they are under a lot of stress. And you can see some of the things, for example, that she's doing in terms of his crackdown in the private sector. You know, obviously, his lockdown has created a lot of frustrated citizens over there. So in his conversation with President Biden, you know, it was bellicose. And when he, you know, said, hey, those who play with fire will perish. He's kind of taking that strong position. It's basically assured that he's going to get, you know, this dictator is going to get reelected, but he wants to pass this agenda. So he wants to seem really, really strong now.
Now, Keith Kroc, I'm talking with Keith Kroc, former undersecretary. You were the clean tech guy. Now, Taiwan semiconductors. I tell people almost every day, America needs clean water, clean air, good food, and semiconductor chips. And most of our semiconductor chips, it went from 37% of the production internationally in 1990 to 12% now. The CHIPS Act is going to bring back and subsidize fabrication plants like the one in Ohio that Intel is going to build and the one in Arizona. I'm happy about that. But are we undermining Taiwan by bringing some of the semiconductor production here, or are we making ourselves safe?
By the way, no, this was a great move. So when we onshored TSMC, you know, the largest onshoring in history, $12 billion, there were a lot of great byproducts that came out of that. First of all, we strengthened and secured our semiconductor supply chain. As many of your listeners know, this is the most important industry in the world. And the other thing that did is it was a catalyst to bring their ecosystem of suppliers over, as well as we use that to persuade Intel and Samsung to invest in the United States, because manufacturing was that, you know, 12% of the world's share. So this is tremendous. And in order to do that, and also that was our catalyst to work with Senator Warren, work with Senator Corn on the CHIPS and Science Act, which is actually a combination of another bill we were with Senator Schumer and Senator Young on, in terms of funding R&D for the 10 most important critical national security sectors. This is a great bill. Yes, it's expensive, but I'll tell you, when it comes to securing our national security and fighting for the freedoms, because technology is the battleground, this is a priceless investment. And to Xi, you know, what he's terrified of is a Sputnik moment and us launching a moonshot. This is equivalent of that.
Now, I got to do full disclosure for the audience. You are all in on Purdue. Unfortunately, you didn't put any of your funding over at Ohio State. I think you ought to open a second center at Ohio State near Intel, Keith Kroc. But you're all into Purdue. Todd Rounds ran the science part of the CHIPS and Science Act. I am skeptical of that much money in the National Science Foundation. How are you going to keep that money from going to shadowy Chinese-backed companies and investors?
By the way, that's an absolutely great point, but it's because it's critical that we make sure this doesn't fall in those guys' hands, because, you know, China has been stealing that intellectual property for so long. And by the way, our guardrails on that right now are not very good. In the CHIP Act, they put some in. But I can tell you what this CHIP Act provides is the carrots and the stick to ensure wherever that money goes, you better have the guardrails in place to make sure it doesn't fall in their hands. So that's one of the things that we're doing at the Institute for Tech Diplomacy at Purdue. We're coming up with what I call a PPP document. That's a policy, process, and procedures that can be used by the Commerce Department, can be used by, you know, when they put out RFPs, it can be used by universities as a best practices template. Here's how you make sure this doesn't fall in our adversaries' hands.
Keith Kroc, tell us a little bit about this institute. I do want a sister institute over at Ohio State, so you got quality people going to it. But, you know, Jerry Hendricks and the other Boilermakers who are listening, they need to know about your institute.
So the Institute for Tech Diplomacy at Purdue has rapidly become the preeminent authority on tech diplomacy and tech statecraft. And what tech statecraft is, that's what we developed when I brought 12 folks from Silicon Valley into the State Department. It's the integration of Silicon Valley's strategies with foreign policy tools based on the trust doctrine, which was something that we utilized to defeat China's master plan for 5G. And now that's created a great bipartisan model with continuity of policy. And it, you know, it underlies the White House's declaration for the future of the Internet. So this is a powerful model because the allies are so key to that.
You know, I'm always promoting Hillsdale College on this show. I got to start promoting Purdue. Do undergraduates get to do the institute, or is that just for grad students with the big brains in math and science and computer science?
Well, by the way, it extends beyond Purdue. So obviously it's for grads, undergrads, but also on our advisory board, we have folks like former Secretary of Defense Leon Panetta. We have General Stanley McChrystal. We have Dan Golden, the longest serving director of NASA. We have the Deputy Secretary General of NATO, So this is a this is an all-star cast. So we just announced, Hugh, the Global Tech Security Commission. We did it in partnership with the Atlantic Council. And what this is all about is to dig deep in the 17 national security tech sectors and develop an integrated plan over a two-year time period. It has the backing of the White House, and it has the backing of Congress.
Keith Kroc, now I've unsuccessfully urged you to run for office in California for Senate. What are your plans for the near term for its future? What are you up to?
Well, you know, I'm really focused in that area. You know, I really caught the bug when I ran United States Economic Diplomacy, Hugh, because, you know, what I saw out there in government, I have so much respect for our career people out there, is that, you know, this democracy, you know, where you and I grew up, you know, that white picket fence, the dog, 2.5 children, all that freedom running around the backyard, that doesn't come for free. And because the natural order of things is the bad king, the dictator, and the emperor. And you know, it goes against all the laws of physics. And we got to protect that every day. And the battleground is technology. So I'm committed to that. As a private citizen, do whatever I can.
Last question, Keith Kroc. This is an investor question. Markets and technology got crushed over the last 6 months. Is that just a cycle in and cycle out sort of thing, or does it represent some fundamental loss of competitiveness and productivity?
You know, those cycles go up and down. So I'm not worried about that. But I can tell you one of the big things that's going on is how the Chinese Communist Party has infiltrated our capital markets, and particularly in the ESG area. So if you look at what ESG stands, environment, social, and governance. And what China's done is they've created an unnatural amount of subsidiaries. They're military companies, they're surveillance companies for the purpose of deception. They get buried in the MSCI index fund. Then they go in BlackRock's 431 ETFs, and that goes, Hugh, into our $11.7 trillion pension funds. And so the average American citizen is unknowingly financing China's military buildup, their surveillance state, and their genocide.
We've got to work on that. Keith Kroc, you are a tireless advocate for freedom and for transparency. Thank you for joining me this morning. Good luck to you in the work ahead at the Institute for Technology Diplomacy at Purdue. Gosh, I hate saying good things about Purdue. Thank you, Keith Kroc.
You're a Boilermaker at heart, by the way.
No, I'm a Buckeye at heart, but, you know, try and put some money into the football program there so it's more than a homecoming game. Be well, Keith.
There you go again. There you go again.
Be well. I know, I got to get him once in a while. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Officer Brandon Tatum is new to the Salem Radio Network this year. When Larry Elder retired, Brandon Tatum stepped up and he made a big splash and a big hit. I met him for the first time out in L.A. earlier this spring. Officer Tatum, welcome to the Hugh Hewitt Show.
Hugh, good morning.
And I got you up early on the West Coast. You know, when I do this show from the West Coast, I'm always bleary-eyed in the first hour. How you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing fine. I'm still trying to figure out who I am.
You know, get some coffee in you. Brandon, tell people about the show and tell people about Uncle Tom Roman numeral 2, which is over at salemnow.com, because you're the star of the first and you're in the former. Tell us about both.
Yeah, so the show, The Officer Tatum, I do from 6 to 3, I mean, from 3 to 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And I try to do my best to just give news to the public in a very authentic, in a very down-to-earth way where people can understand. I add a little comedy in it. I talk about policing in America because I'm a former police officer. And so that's the gist of the show, is for me to just be authentic with the news. You know, it's hard to find authentic news. It's hard to find people that would come out and just tell it like it is. And that's what I typically do.
It's a great slot on the West Coast, Brandon. That was my slot for 17 of my 23 years on the Salem Radio Network, was the 3 to 6 Pacific time. It's drive time afternoon. I think it's the second best slot in radio after morning drive in the East. But more afternoon drive in the West is when people want to get what's happened. They want to know what's going on. And they want it made it under. They don't want a lot of rants, right? They want the news.
Right, 100%. And that's what I try to give them. I try to give news with a little flavor. Uncle Tom 2 is an amazing movie. I was in the first Uncle Tom documentary, and it was phenomenal. It was like the only documentary, I believe, that tells the story of America in a very, I would say, nuanced and very accurate way, and the story of Americans of African descent in this country and some of the struggles that Black conservatives go through. And Uncle Tom 2 digs in even deeper and goes into, you know, Martin Luther King and some of those civil rights movements that went on, and the Marxism and all of these things that the left is pushing into America. And so I think it's an incredible film. Larry Elder did a really good job. Justin Malone was the producer. He did a very good job. I mean, it is a film that people just absolutely have to see, no matter what, where you come from, what your background is, what color, this fictitious skin color that they try to portray in America. You have to see the film.
Uncle Tom 1 blew away Salem Media. We had no idea that we knew Larry Elder was good at projecting and talking and persuading, but we had no idea that the market for Uncle Tom 1 would be so huge. So the story has to be told. Brandon Tatum is a part of telling it the second time and expanding on it, deepening it, making it clear that Black America does not have to be trapped in Democratic Party politics. It can go wherever it wants and it can succeed. And that is, I think it's resonating, Brandon. How's the show, your radio show, been received? Is that proving to you the market is there?
Yes, it's been very good. You know, people have called into the radio show because I allow callers to call in and add value to the show. And I've been very surprised at the way people, you know, enjoy the show. I mean, somebody said that I'm the second person that they like outside of, I'll never get the guy's name, it's so early in the morning, but I'm one of their top radio show hosts that they've ever listened to. And that really made me, you know, very excited. It was just such a great experience to listen to people call in and say great things and then add value to the show. A lot of people saying they're glad that I'm on the radio, they're glad to hear Common Sense Voice. And it's really good to hear. And
I'm glad you're also in Uncle Tom too. But I want the radio show to spread like kudzu, and people can call up Salem Media. They can find out how to syndicate it. But Brandon, in the minute we got left, tell people where you're from and how you grew up and when you became a cop.
Yeah, I'm from Fort Worth, Texas. Yeah, I grew up in an inner city and in a Black community. My father was a firefighter. He retired as a fire chief. I played college football. I was in the 2010 NFL draft. I did get drafted. My dreams were crushed. I decided to become a police officer by chance. They ended up calling me back after I applied, and I was a police officer 6.5 years, did everything I could on the police department. And I got into politics as a police officer, and I went from there, and God has just delivered me in the position that he wants me to be in, and that's telling the truth and being a voice for the people. And I plan to continue to do that with the best of my ability until God decides to do something different. So
he is flying the flag of freedom and belief on the West Coast. Brandon Tatum is now on all these radio stations, and if you haven't got him, you should get him in the afternoon. 3 to 6 or 6 to 9 in the East. And he's just great radio, but he's also a key figure in Uncle Tom Roman numeral 2 over at salemnow.com. Brandon, have a good morning. Get some sleep, my friend. I always will go back to bed when I'm broadcasting on the West Coast. I just go back to bed. So that's my recommendation. Have no coffee. Go back to bed, Brandon. Thank you for joining me. salemnow.com for Uncle Tom 2. Hey, everyone. I'll be back tomorrow. It will be voting day in Missouri. Vote for Eric Schmidt. It'll be voting day in Michigan. Don't forget Kevin Reinke. It'll be voting day in Arizona. I think Karen Robson is going to beat Carrie Lake. I think Karen Robson is coming out of nowhere to beat Carrie Lake. It's the fake Lake stuff. And I don't know who's going to beat whether Bruno, as I know him and love him, or Blake Masters, who's very easy to remember as well. Well, I don't know which one of those is going to win, but tomorrow's voting. Don't forget to vote. Make your plans today. Thank you, Adam. Thank you, Generalissimo. Thank you, Jacob. I'll be back tomorrow on the next You Do It show.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.